Did I ever tell you about the time I drank AIDS blood, me and my wife, in a ritual called the stupidest thing I've ever done in my life? My wife was in a total panic the next day. It was back when we first started dating before we had kids, where we didn't think AIDS was an issue. We were drunk on Halloween in the West Village, major distinction there, very important distinction, and we're walking around. I think we were dressed as crusty punks that night, and Halloween in New York is a very big deal, and it's Halloween's always been a big deal to me, but in New York, it's such a big deal that a lot of your night, if you don't have specific parties or you already have tickets, it's just like going to overflowing bar after overflowing bar where you can't get in. So it's a lot of walking. Anyway, we're walking around, and I see this clearly gay dude on the ground on the pavement, and he's going, moaning in pain. But the problem is, I can't tell if he's just on ketamine and is moaning because he's a drama queen and he's too wasted and I should just ignore him, or if this blood coming out of his head is actual blood. Like, it could all just be he was wearing a zombie costume. And so he's kind of like a club kid zombie. So he was like a dead raver was his costume, I guess you'd call it. And so he's bleeding everywhere, but is it blood? It's not really pouring out of your head. When you cut your head, as we know from wrestling, it bleeds like crazy, and it's cups and cups of blood. This blood seemed kind of thick and stagnant, but it was a big sort of a gash in his head. Anyway, the question, as I look at this guy, is should I be helping a person who was just hit by a car or something and is going to bleed to death if we don't get him to the hospital? Or is this a wasted guy with fake blood on his head? So what did I do? I took two fingers, I put it on his head, and then I went and had a little taste to see if it was blood or corn syrup. Then my wife, girlfriend at the time, did the same fucking thing. Can you believe that? What were we thinking? Pros and cons. Cons, you have AIDS. Pros, you have now identified the man's blood, whether it was blood or corn syrup. She woke up the next day having a full-on panic attack. I can't remember if we got AIDS tests that day or a little bit later. Or sometimes when you're doing a normal test, you can go, hey, can you throw in some AIDS tests in there? Why is AIDS so funny? I know it's a horrible disease that devastated the gay community and the creative class and killed a lot of heroin addicts and everything. It's very sad. But there's just something funny about it. Not people with the disease, but just the word. I don't know. Like Leslie Arfin got me going a long time ago. She went to India and her and her friend had this inside joke. Anytime they got remotely sick, like say they got a cold or had a tiny bit of the squirts, they go, I have AIDS. Great, I have fucking AIDS. I have AIDS. Or whenever we describe a hangover, we say we have AIDS. It's not as funny as cancer. But I've done that. The cancer has metastasized when I have hangovers, and I say that I see cancer patients with no eyebrows, and I sort of nod to them because we're the same. But it's not as funny as AIDS. McInnes claims AIDS funny. Did you hear, speaking of war vets, this op-ed professor saying that social justice warriors should also be considered veterans and should be included in Veterans Day festivities because they've been through that too? That's a doozy. That's a joke I make. That's the problem with these professors now. Their life has become my Onion article. Like I said, I used to joke about how I have a hangover so bad that, you know, the next Veterans Day, I'm going to get up there with the Pearl Harbor survivors and just stand next to them and nod to them because we've basically been through the same shit. Now, professors are saying that joke for real in real life. But yeah, can you believe? And here's the other funny thing about licking that gay's blood. I couldn't tell. It's not like corn syrup is Hawaiian punch, where the second you taste it, your mouth fills with strawberries. It pretty much tastes like blood, which is nothing. You know, blood, if you probably have, you know, you've cut your lip before and you've drank it, and you're like, that's kind of metallic, but it's basically water. It's basically red water. Same with fake blood. So I still don't know to this day. I mean, I know I don't have AIDS. Remember in high school, this was a thing. Now, I'm a Canadian non-drug user, never touched a syringe, never had gay sex. I'm 16 years old. I'm living in the upper middle class rural suburbs of Canada in Kanata, Ontario. And me and everyone I knew, we were positive we all had AIDS. We got AIDS. And then I had sex with, because every time you have sex with someone, you're having sex with all their partners. So we all have AIDS, guys. We'll do the test, but it's just a formality. I mean, I don't even know why I'm getting some paperwork. I know I have AIDS. I've already written my goodbye note to my parents. I never even got to move out of the house. I know a guy. All right, I'll say his name. Shane Smith, the guy I started Vice magazine with. He got an AIDS test, and he'd already written his goodbye note to his parents and planned his suicide, how he's going to jump off a building. And then when he got the results back, as we all did, that said no, he couldn't believe it. It was like being reborn. And that was not a remotely unique case. I think what happened was the gays didn't like the stigma of it being a gay disease. So they said, anyone can get it, okay? It's not just gays. Rich kids in the suburbs could get it. And so their propaganda worked, and they did obfuscate it from the gay disease into the anyone disease, anyone who's ever had sex even once or gotten a blowjob or a fucking hand job. But that turned out to be detrimental to their cause, because the funding started going into the burbs and middle class and all these kids getting, you know, it's probably cost like $1,500. Canada's free healthcare. So the government is just getting reamed with all these rich suburbanites getting test after test every month, like they're porn stars. AIDS. Maybe that's why it's funny, because we were all so scared of it. And we look back now and go, what the hell was that about? I got so much less pussy than the generation before me. In the 70s with their tube socks and their short shorts, everyone had the clap, gonorrhea, chlamydia. It was funny. Oh, you got the clap? That sucks. Oh, you got crabs? Oh, well, people had t-shirts. You got crabs. It was like a fun, cool thing. Herpes. Everyone had herpes. I didn't start getting STDs till my 20s. College was not pussy central. Now, I was in a band and did pretty good outside of that, but that's what it took. You had to be the lead singer of a popular local band. And even then, it was not falling from the trees. Really didn't start going until I moved to Montreal at the age of 20. Anyway, I was telling my friend Sonia that, and this was like 20 years ago, and I still look back and go, what an imbecile. What a stupid thing to do. And she told me about a time she saw a raisin on the street, and she went, what's a raisin doing there? And she picked it up. And of course, it was poo-poo, or as they say in Africa, da poo-poo. She pick up the poo-poo because she think it is a raisin. We have a patois version of this podcast for those of you who find it confusing, where I do the exact same podcast, but all in like BBC's African patois. So I'd say, did I tell you about the time the gay man have blood on head and I eat it worse than the poo-poo? I eat a gay man blood off his head. Did you know in America, I see the porn, they rub the poo-poo on their face. They take the poo-poo in there. How did they not laugh in that? Everyone in that, you know, the viral video I'm talking about where I think homosexuality is a capital offense in Uganda. And to justify that, they had a little press conference where they talked about how they were watching some gay porn and there was feces in this particular video and the men were enjoying it. And that became just basically all homosexuals and all Americans thoroughly enjoy fecal play. And as he was explaining this to the audience and the press, not one person was laughing. They were all just sort of taking notes. Interesting. Well, I don't want to go to America then. I don't know. I thought they had just all had a giant chocolate sandwich or maybe an ice cream bar. I was very surprised to learn that all Americans eat their own shit. One of them did drink gay blood. Pretty stupid. Pretty fucking dumb. That same year, my friend Judy Rosen, she was a dead Juggalo baby. There was a popular meme at the time, viral video picture going around of a Juggalette, whose baby died. And she had a Juggalo funeral. Oh no, that's a different one. I think we were all Juggalos that year. Yeah, I spent about $350 on the Juggalo store. I still have the chain wallet with the hatchet on it. I got a new rule this Halloween. I'm going to be waiting outside. I don't know what I'll be. Could be a hoser. The thing with having a beard is you basically have to go from beard backwards. So I could be the tall bad guy from Superman. I think I might be able to be Bill the Butcher, although he had more of a mustache than a beard. But you have to start with beard and then see who has a beard. Anyway, I'm going to be doing security. And I'm going to have a bowl of Smarties. Now, you British people probably think Smarties are those skinny M&Ms. Here in America, Smarties are those shit candies that are just, no, not de poo-poo, that are just like, they look like aspirins. And there's a rainbow of weak, sort of washed out gray colors. White, orange, yellow, blah, blah. They're all sort of the same grayness. And it's the shittiest candy there is. You take a couple bites and it's gone. No chocolate to it. It's just like powdered sugar color. And usually they're the last candy. Remember when you get home and you sort them all into categories? That category is the last category to get eaten. Sometimes you just throw them out. Because if you're good at Halloween, and I know you are, then you should get two pillowcases. Two pillowcases takes the better part of a year to eat. That's another. I'm talking about two different Halloweens, by the way. I'm talking about the kid Halloween, which you should stop doing at the age of 13. And then I'm just also later talking about adult Halloween, which starts around 16, 17. So from 13 to 17, you should not participate in Halloween. The latter is the sexy one where you get wasted and party and have really politically incorrect costumes. The previous one is about the candy. And if we're focusing on the candy one, you go around, you know, you take your little brother out. That's phase one. Then you go with your friends, you know, blah, 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 the social one. That's phase two. Then there's phase three that happens from 9 to 10. And that's when your parents are probably partying. At least they were when I was a kid. And so that's when you go out and there's no one on the street anymore. And you get adults just emptying their bowls because they don't want candy the next day. That's when you really score. Anyway, I'm going to have the Smarties at the front. And if someone shows up with fucking sweatpants on and a mask, not even on their face, but on their head as a hat because it's too hot, guess what they're getting? Some Smarties. That dumbass is getting Smarties so he can smarten up. And I'll be outside, right? Now behind me in the front of the house by the front door, I will have 5 zombies. I'm going to pay them probably $100 each just to mill around the door all night going, don't drink their blood. It's not real blood. Actually, you could drink their blood. It's not real blood. And then there's going to be a bowl of full bars. And I've heard this runs you about $300. So I'm already at $800 now. We're talking Mars bars. We're talking O. Henry's. We're talking Twix. All huge variety of full bars in a big bowl. Now, you have to make it run the gamut through these zombies, but they're not real zombies. Zombies don't exist. Hey, millennials. Zombies don't exist. My brother and my brother-in-law grew up with zombies. That whole generation, they grew up with zombies. And every time we'd get a new apartment, one of them would come by, Uncle Mike or Uncle Kyle, and they'd look at it and they'd go, yeah, I mean, fire escape doesn't touch the ground. It's pretty much zombie-proof. Unless they could come from that person's roof and get into your window there. And I'd say to my brother, okay, thanks for the tip. I guess you're a consultant now. I'm not concerned about zombies. My generation, I'm 48, so we're just before Freddy. I'm not scared of Freddy. He looks fucking stupid to me. Just wake up. He's in a dream. Jason, on the other hand, that's the age I was. And there's a lot of times when I'm walking around alone in the forest, like when I had a place upstate and I'd have to go get something, I'd think, this is a perfect opportunity for Jason to sink an axe in the back of my head. You know how you survive that, by the way? You know how you get Jason away? I don't know why this works, but you say something that could never be in a Friday the 13th movie. Like, I like pickles in my ears. So as you're walking through the forest, you say, Minnie Mouse is my best friend. You know, things that would be incongruous in a scene where you'd see Jason. Hey, remember when that guy from the Sex Pistols was a bank robber in Brazil after Johnny Rotten left? He had a hanky on his head. Hello, boys. I like chocolate friends. I'm dancing around with sparkles on my eyelashes. What'd you say? That's a caterpillar? Oh, wrong eyelash. I meant eyebrow. Peek-a-loo. And you just see Jason go, what the fuck? And sort of walk away. But if you say something that could be in a Friday the 13th movie, like, hello? Hello, is someone there? You're getting a fucking chainsaw through your guts. Or a hook. Or something. Oof. Anyway, so I'm going to have zombies in there. All the millennials will be scared shitless. And the Gen Xers will go, that's not a real thing. Not that Jason's a real thing. He lived in a swamp. We need Trump to go to Friday the 13th movies, drain the swamp, and then you just kill Jason, although I don't know how you kill Jason. I believe Freddy had a fight with Jason, maybe in outer space. Was that a movie? Or maybe Predator and Jason had a fight? I gotta watch those. I haven't seen a really shitty movie in a long time. Another spooky one from back then, by the way, is Black Christmas. They remade it, but the original in 1983... I used to pray to God for a time machine to go back so I could have not seen that movie and would leave the room. The killer's in the attic. Anyway, so then you got to run the gamut and then you get the chocolate bars. And I'm just going to sit there like a bouncer. And I don't care if there's one guy last year. He's like 15. What the fuck? What are you doing here, dude? You like bonbons? And I said, what are you doing here? You don't have a costume. Meanwhile, I'm dressed like a werewolf as I am genuinely pissed off at this guy. I have like fur glued to my face. And I go, what are you doing? Because he's desecrating the whole thing. And it goes back. It's pre-Christianity, Halloween. It goes back to our fear of death. It's got a long storied past. By the way, speaking of cultural appropriation with the, you know, you can't wear the Indian headdress or dress like a Mexican. Aren't you guys stealing our pagan ritual? Isn't you, as a non-European, aren't you stealing, culturally appropriating my holiday? Even Christians are appropriating it. It's pre-Christian. Anyway, and I say to him, what are you doing? You know, he pulls out a mask from his bag. He goes, oh, it was too hot. This guy's my height. And he's got even the mask. It's one of those stupid scream masks that are like a buck. I go, get the fuck out of here. I shoved him out the door. He was laughing like I was kidding. Sometimes I can be so mean that people think I'm doing a character. No, dude. Gavin McInnes is pissed at you for not wearing a mask. So this year, anyway, yeah, I'm just going to not. And if it's a group of five and two have really good costumes and three don't, sorry. You even get kids coming from a few neighborhoods down the street. They get dropped off in my fancy neighborhood because the candy's better, which I'm fine with. That doesn't violate any of the rules. But you can't just show up. We got these black kids coming from the PJs in their PJs. No, 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 no. Yeah, it's fine. You want to commute. There's no law against commuting. But you have to have a costume on. What is this, just a free candy heist? Absolutely not. Now, I know what you're saying. You're saying, Gav, what if there's a four-year-old who has a perfect Deadpool costume? You're going to send him into a room with zombies? He's never going to go. Great point. I have a plan for that, a contingency. If there's a little kid, like a five-year-old, who has a great costume, by the way, my five-year-old wants to be Jason. We've come full circle on that. And my wife won't let him because she thinks it will look like we let him watch Friday the 13th, which no one will think. Don't worry, guys. I'll push it through. It's sort of like a corrupt police force here. The chief can say no to things, but I'm a top lieutenant here. You're getting a gun. Don't worry. You're getting your badge back. He's going to be Jason. But anyway, Yeah, I will go and I'll hold the kid with my right arm and he can bring his mom and I will push through the zombies for him, get the full bar, plop it in his bag, come back. How many bars do you think I should get? I think it should be 3 full salad bowls of bars. Yeah, that sounds about whatever $300 is. It ends up being pretty expensive. Like, I go to town on Christmas and I go to town on Halloween, and that'll run you $1,000 a time with the signs and the decorations and the lights and everything. It gets pricey. But you get it. The Christmas is better because you get to have all those decorations up for a month. Halloween is really just a night. Although my neighbors have already started putting shit up, which I'm not okay with. You got to wait till, I was going to say you have to wait till Thanksgiving, but that's after. What the fuck am I talking about? For Christmas, you have to wait for Thanksgiving. That's the deal. What else is in the news? I had a conversation I'm reluctant to discuss with one of the founders of a crew called DMS, and his name was Scott Ebanks. And I tread lightly when I discuss this crew. I don't even want to call them a gang because they are no joke, and their guys go to jail, and they are, I'm not going to say involved in crime, but you know what I mean. They're a gang of tough gentlemen who enjoy a good scrap, but I got to tell this story anyway, and I'm not going to disparage them in any way, shape, or form. I mean, they're the kind of guys where if you have a DMS tattoo and you're not in DMS, they'll cut it off. So, make a long story short, the other podcast, when I was talking about how hardcore bands are funny, I was mostly talking about Sick of It All, who are hilarious, but I mentioned Sheer Terror, and I said, dude Paul is funny. He gets wind of this. I don't think he heard what I said, and he says, we heard that Gavin McInnes and Proud Boys want to come to our shows. They're not welcome at our shows. Fuck that guy. Fuck them. That's kind of rich. So I think gentlemen in my club were saying, started wearing Sheer Terror shirts and stuff just to, you know, antagonize him, which isn't fucking with DMS. That's just sort of teasing a guy who said, fuck you, which maybe we shouldn't even have done. But to be clear here, I keep having to reiterate what this is. Proud Boys are like the Elks Lodge. They're like the Shriners. It's mostly a beer club. In fact, we really glommed on to Brett Kavanaugh because he said, I like beer, about 7 times in his hearing. That's what we do. Now, we do like to fight occasionally. Only we don't pick fights. We don't deal drugs. We don't get involved in crime. We love the cops. So think of us as Knights of Columbus. And yes, there have been some brawls at rallies. Those were because I think it started when I got pepper sprayed. Proud Boys started saying, if one of our guys or someone we like Lauren Southern or even Jordan B. Peterson or Ben Shapiro, someone who we don't even have that much in common with because he hates Trump, if they're doing a talk, we'll go with them and fight for those guys' rights to say things. That's part of like being a patriot, you know? But, you know, no racism, no anti-Semitism, blah, 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 no Nazis allowed, multicultural. It's funny how the left is so determined to call you a white supremacist that they are now calling our black members white supremacists. Like at the Griffin, this bar in L.A., these Proud Boys show up and they go, some comedian loser says, get these guys out of here. Why are you allowing Nazis into your bar? And the bouncer goes, because he has eyeballs, he goes, they're not, how, you guys are all white, and the guys you're calling Nazis are mostly black and Hispanic. There's only like a few white guys with them. And then the response to that was, why are you defending them? Okay, I'll get them out of here. Which is a very dumb thing to do, because California has crazy laws about politics and the service industry. So it's one of the only states there are where you could go into a IHOP dressed as Hitler and say, hi, I'm a Nazi, and they have to serve you pancakes. Now, the irony of this law, and I've mentioned this before, but the irony of this law is it was designed in the 50s to protect communists because communists were being banned from establishments. So they said, new law, you can't ban a guy for his politics. So the Griffin did, so they're in. About to get a whole load of shit. But So I hear the guy, Scott Ebanks, challenge me to debate. And I'm like, dude, we're probably on the same page. That's the frustrating thing. Like sharp skins, skinheads against racial prejudice have started this big war. And you go, what do we disagree with? I mean, if you're a communist, I disagree with you. But so does everyone with any kind of a Google access hates communists. And as I said on the other show, you talk about white genocide and genocide all the time. It's happened about seven world leaders have tried it. Never worked out well for them, by the way. And they were all socialists. So you're the guys who bandy around the genocide term and are responsible for it. But even if, you know, you disagree with someone, what's with all this fucking street warring? And I probably agree with the sheer terror guy about everything. And all those old hardcore dudes, all the especially New Yorkers, they are the biggest victims of political, I shouldn't say victims, I don't like that word, the biggest targets of the politically correct mob. And it's unique in New York City because we are rude people. And it's sort of like how cops, you know, a cop will see a dead body a day. Like there's a first of all, there's a murder a day in New York, but there's also a suicide a day on the subways. No one talks about it because they don't want any copycats, but it doesn't work. Every time your train is delayed in New York, someone killed themselves. And the NYPD have to pick up those bodies. There's not a special body crew. That's cops. They have to pick up an arm and put it in a bag. And so these cops become kind of macabre. And they will hold up a human head and say, hey, it kind of does feel like a bowling ball. Now, if you're to enforce political correctness on those cops, and they are doing that, these cops don't have a release. And they become a pressure cooker and they kill themselves. And I'm still accruing the data on this, but I've noticed just from talking to my cop friends that suicide is on the rise in the NYPD. And I think it's linked to this policing their behavior and making sure everything they do is not offensive. And that expands out to New Yorkers in general. When you're packed in this close, you have to have a dark sense of humor. You have to see a human turd on the ground and find it amusing. You have to think it's funny when a guy's barfing or a junkie's lying in the middle of the road. You have to find that amusing or you'll cry. And also, to get these junkies off your back and all these violent assholes everywhere, you got to start to be a dick. Fuck you! And I noticed that in London, and I've lived in New York for 20 years, I've taken on this survival instinct. So as the fans are pushing in on Tommy Robinson, I'm going, fuck off! Get the fuck out of my face! To people that are my, you know, political equals. We have the same opinions on Tommy and everything going on in Britain. And I'm telling them to fuck off because that's just what you do. And I saw them sort of recoil like, what? Are you not with Tommy? I'm with Tommy. And I go, yeah, you're also squishing me. Fuck off. You can see in my interview with Ezra Levant on Rebel, there's this blonde-haired woman with a Louis Vuitton bag and she's just got her phone right up in my grill. And I go, get the fucking phone out of my face. And she goes, oh my God, so rude. You are so rude. And I told you this already, this story, but she followed me for like 10 minutes with her phone documenting how rude I am. I still feel the same way, lady. Fuck off. So that's why the whole Paul Bearer thing, sheer terror thing, I didn't understand it because I'm like, guys, we're on the same fucking page about everything. I'm sure there's not one thing that any member of DMS has ever said that I don't agree with. And I still think they're funny dudes. And I have nothing but respect for them. So anyways, that Scott guy says, I challenge you to a debate. And he goes, why are you appropriating my skinhead culture? He's a black guy. And I'm not appropriating. We don't dress like skinheads. Fred Perry's, yes, some skinheads wore them. Nazi and the good guys. So did mods. So did tennis players. In fact, if we were doing anything with the Fred Perry's, it was more of a mod thing. It was more of a, you know, the mods were working class guys in Britain who wanted to look nice. They wanted to look like 50s American preppies. And so they would spend what little money they had on a sweater vest and a tie. And even the whole parka thing that they wear, that was to keep this was pre-catalytic converters in Britain. So you'd get soot and dirt on you when you rode a scooter. So they would wear these big American military parkas to cover their suits so they wouldn't get their suits dirty riding their Vespas. So you can might as well say it's an appropriation of that, although I don't even believe in appropriation. Every subculture is a hybrid. Even the mods, even the punks, it was an evolution of glam. There's no such thing as a fresh look. And I like that. I like that about art. That, you know, everyone was mimicking someone else. David Letterman was doing Johnny Carson. Jimmy Kimmel was doing David Letterman. They're all, you know, mimicking their idols. Did you know the Damned single, New Rose? It's called the first punk single ever. And I talked to Rat Scabies about this. And I said, you guys, everyone thinks punk was started in New York, but you guys were the first single. And he goes, no, mate, we got it from New York. And I said, but this was 76. New York hadn't released any punk singles. They were just playing shows. No one was on vinyl yet. How could you have heard it? And he goes, we didn't hear it. We read about it in the zine Punk that someone brought from New York. So we just sort of gleaned what it probably sounded like. It would say fast beats and fast songs and kind of scary lyrics, spooky voice. I said, all right, let's do it. I got a new rose, I got a good, and I knew that I always would. There's a brand new rose in town. That was just based on reading an article on what punk probably sounded like. See what I mean? It's always trying to do something else. Even, this isn't really a good example of that, but I can't resist crowbarring it into the story. But I heard that Ozzy and Black Sabbath, they were above a horror theater. And they said, let's make scary music. You know, like a horror movie, but music. It kind of makes the songs comical, doesn't it? General's gal. Now you're trying to scare me, dude? I'm not eight. Although it worked. I talked to some Brits who were my age, and they said, the Clash were the Clash. No one really, I mean, they were good. Everyone liked them. But the Sex Pistols were the first, and I was 12 at the time, and I was fucking scared shitless. I mean, we all were. All little kids thought Johnny Rotten was going to come out from under your bed. I mean, he was the boogeyman. We didn't know what the fuck was going on with them. They were just like evil monsters who were really scary. Johnny Rotten. Hello. The councils. They ban our concerts and they take our money. I knew this. You remember Tony Buzzcock, the guy I told you about before, who isn't my friend anymore because I wouldn't let him bring his rescue pit bulls over to my house? Awesome guy besides that one thing. And I'm totally fine with breaking up because I'm not changing that rule. But he worked with Lydon. He did all the sound production for Pill. And I said, I was stealing my friend Dan's adjectives, but I said, how do you hang out with a guy who acts like a sexy squirrel all the time? He's always like, hello, oh, you're reading a novel, are you? Getting more educated, turning page after page. Can you just relax? And he goes, that's not an act, dude. That's who he is. Like, you'll have tea at his house, and he goes, he'd be like, would you like some sugar in your tea? Everything is an intense sentence. Anyway, so I call the dude, Scott. Awesome guy. Just got out of jail for 20 years. And I'm trying to say to him, we're not a gang, we're a drinking club. But then I was thinking, we do seem to be going to jail a lot. I mean, I spend so much of my time talking to lawyers, raising money for lawyers, getting guys out of jail. I got this guy, this Canadian who was busted in D.C. fighting a Palestinian dude who picked a fight with them. And that guy got beat up later. And now he's facing hate crime charges, even though he was there for Israel. Some other guy, Tommy, was stabbed these dudes and he was facing 20 years. And then we had to, you know, work with the lawyers, raise money for him, and then find out that we have CCTV of him being attacked. He's only defending himself after being attacked about 10 times by Antifa. Another knifing going on in Virginia. I mean, lots of stabbings and trials. So it is just a drinking club, but it's so big, so vast, and it seems to be disproportionately working class that there's plenty of trouble. And I don't know of one case where Proud Boys were the instigators. There may have been, but in every single one, it was self-defense. And we live in a world now where any kind of conflict doesn't have to be a fight. It is, It is assault. Like this woman at the airport I told you about a long time ago who was harassing me, taking pictures of me, calling me a Nazi. And I'm with my kids and I touch her arm as she walks by and I go, "You okay? You're all right?" Because I started filming her. I told you this story before. I started filming her and I said, "What's your problem? You got a problem here? What have I said something? Is there a sentence I've said that you disagree with?" And she goes, "Just go. You're making a woman cry." Oh, Jesus. And then as she walks by me later, I do that touch of an arm where you go, "You okay? You all right?" I mean, I was being sarcastic and facetious, but it was a kind of touch where, you know, if you're at a school dance and a teacher would come over and say, "Are you guys still, are you asleep?" That kind of a touch, not like a grab. And she second my fingertips touch her shirt, she goes, "That's assault." And she goes and gets a fucking security guy who, believe it or not, doesn't press charges. Anyway, that's a long tangent, but I talked to the guy and I said, "You know, I'm not racist, blah, blah, blah. I don't know why we have beef. You guys are a totally different thing, totally different pastime. We have nothing in common in, as far as what we do. And then as far as ideology goes, we're the same, exactly the same. You hate communists. You hate political correctness. What are we disagreeing? I don't understand. I said sheer terror was funny and now my friends can't go to those shows. That's funny." And he said, "Look, I know you're cool, but a lot of your boys, man, they're saying shit." And I go, "Then they're not my boys. If they're saying like the Holocaust didn't happen or something, bye-bye." And there's a million reasons for that. The biggest one is black conservatives get crapped on every Thanksgiving. Tommy Sotomayor was disinvited from his family's Thanksgiving, and the guy that replaced him is a pedophile. So in the black community, having fucked a 12-year-old isn't as bad as being a Trump guy. Anyway, so these guys are pariahs in their own communities, ostracized by their parents, their friends, their relatives, people at work, way worse than us. I mean, I'm a pariah in my neighborhood, but it's a very liberal neighborhood and in New York. And even then, I get people coming out to me going, "What are you doing out here, man? Love your work, blah, blah, blah." I do fine. And my family, my parents adore me. But it's much worse for black conservatives. So after they finally go on this gulag, they make this pilgrimage, and then they end up hanging out at our drinking club. It's totally unacceptable to me that after all that, they would still face animosity from some racist douche. No way is that happening. It's a safe haven. It's a trigger. It's a safe space. Proud Boys is a safe space for black hoteps. Anyway, I'm saying that to him, and then he goes, "Your boys, man, I don't know." And they say some shit, and I go, "Okay, what did they say?" And I go, one of them was like, "Time to get over slavery. That was 400 years ago." And I go, "I kind of agree with that. And I'm not disparaging Mr. Ebanks. And lots of black leaders say the same thing. Jesse Jackson says the same thing. Malcolm X said the same thing. Move on from slavery. Don't let it hinder you." Fucking Snoop Dogg, who is a racist towards whites and was on Farrakhan's album, he thinks slavery is, he talks about, he says all people who like Trump are racist, fuck them, don't come to my shows. That's how far to the BLM side he is. And even he says, "I don't like seeing things like Roots. Move on. Why are they dwelling in the past?" So my point is, it's not an esoteric thing to say. It's definitely not a racist thing to say. And that's a disagreement. It's almost like a philosophical disagreement. One group says slavery is still hurting blacks today. I totally understand that argument, and it's a valid argument. And many of my friends, like Ann Coulter, supports it. It's not even a right or a left thing. It's kind of like pro-life and pro-choice when they say it's a male-female thing. No, 50% of women are pro-life. So it's an ethical discussion about when a thing is a viable human. It's not, you're not anti-woman if you're anti-abortion. Because, again, about half of the anti-abortionists are women. So get it out of the chick thing. Pro-life people don't hate women. And by the way, there's a great argument for pro-lifers that it's actually better for girls because we are now getting into gender-selective abortions, especially with immigrants where they're coming from a culture where men are much more valuable, like Indians. Look up this Hindu couple in Canada who just had an abortion because it was a girl. That's called gendercide. And you're going to start seeing more as the technology gets better. You're going to see more people from primitive cultures, and a lot of India is pretty primitive, saying no to girls. So literally murdering female babies. So in that sense, the feminists should be on the pro-life side. Any hizzle. That's how minor I see that disagreement. It should definitely not lead to some sort of violent beef. That's a good name for a band, Violent Beef. And I talked to the guy for a while, and I begged him to come on the show. He's not sure he wants to anymore. But I think, fuck all the disagreements with communism and beef with sheer terror and all that silliness. What's really interesting about this guy is, well, first that punk rock and hardcore saved his life and gave him a culture. And I've seen that happen quite a few times. And by the way, it's happened to a lot of Proud Boys who were going down a dark route and now are married and have a kid and a job and a trade. But also that he went to jail for 20 years for a crime he didn't commit. There's the fascinating story right there. Here's an even crazier part. In Britain, he would have been guilty. Now, I'll take a few steps back. This is the story as I can tell. He's in Washington Square Park. It's 1990. That's still basically the 80s. And New York is a fucking violent shithole. Super dangerous. If you're into the punk scene or anything, and you're hanging around that, junkies everywhere. Lineups around the block for heroin. They would deal. I've interviewed heroin dealers who would get, what's it called? Rigor mortis? No, it's not rigor mortis. What's that thing you get when your arm gets all stiff from doing the same thing? Jesus. There's something about doing a podcast or a show where you will forget, like, your dad's name. You have no recall. I don't understand what it is. The second I turn this off, I'll go, of course. It was delirium tremor rigor mortis. But anyway, that thing you get. Oh, it's right on the tip of my tongue. And I know you at home are listening going, hey, moron, it's called tetanus syndrome. What the hell is it called? Tourette's? Oh, shit. Every time I do a podcast like this, I get 100 messages on Instagram and, not Twitter anymore, going, dude, you were talking about Mary Worth. That was the soap opera star. Anyway. Delirium tremens? Tourette's syndrome? God damn, that's driving me nuts. Anyway, they would get that thing from dealing heroin. Because they were taking 100, giving out a bag, a bundle. Taking 100, giving out a bundle. Taking 100, giving out a bundle. For hours. Until it gave them that thing that you get with your wrist that hurts, that typists and tree planters and other people get. God damn, that's going to drive me nuts. Do I have to stop this podcast and look it up? Is that unentertaining? Thing you get with your wrist tired? Carpal tunnel syndrome. Sorry, guys. I apologize. I will warn you, though, if you're a youngster, you're going to get like this. You're going to forget bands. Every time I hang out with my dad or any of his friends, it's always like, yes, well, that was a long time ago. And there was a popular film star at the time who, oh, fuck, what was his name? Stay. And then the whole table will be like, Steve McQueen. No, Steve. It was, may have been a Steve. And I'm just like, hey, geriatrics, let's skip the name of the guy and continue with the story. I don't care who he was. I don't care if it was in Luxembourg. Just a European city, got it. Let's move on, please. You're killing the whole momentum, as I just did with carpal tunnel syndrome. But anyway, that was New York back then. And there'd be a lineup around the block, around this some abandoned, you know, brownstone or even building, like six-floor building. And you'd go, there'd be a lineup, all junkies lining up all the way up the stairs. And then these drug dealers, they had more money than they knew what to deal with. They would have a thing called a money room, which is like you're the smallest room in your apartment, filled floor to ceiling with money. Because they're Puerto Ricans. So they're not into yachting. They don't like going fox hunting. They don't play golf in Scotland. They don't have very expensive tastes. So they buy their mom a Chevy S10 Blazer or whatever, or even a Range Rover. Buy their mom an insane car, which is a pain in the ass now because you're in the Lower East Side and parking is a bitch. You buy a Jesus piece, which is a giant gold Jesus head with a bunch of diamonds on it. That's 40 grand. All right, what do I do with my other million? Just sits there. You go out to the strip club? Okay. That's 10,000 bucks for you and all your friends to get wasted and bottle service and 50 songs each and get laid. I'm sure there was prostitution back then. That's still maybe an hour's work. And you don't feel like going to the strip club every single night. Anyway, so that's what New York was like when Scott was running around with these guys. And a fight breaks out. You have to fight back when a fight breaks out. You know, when you live in that culture, and I never did, just for the record, I was always middle class. You get called a bitch, that's it. It's the same as prison. It's essentially prison culture bleeding out into normal free culture, and that is don't ever let anyone call you a bitch or even appear weak, or now you're going to be a target. Like Nicole Dufresne, God bless her cotton socks. She's coming back from our local bar, Max Fish. This was probably 2001. This kid named Rudy Fleming, black kid, he stole his uncle's gun, and he's just robbing some hipsters, robbing some yuppies. Give them the money, guys. And she's got that feminist arrogance, and she goes to Rudy, what are you going to do, bitch? Shoot me? Guess what happened to Nicole? She's dead now. Her boyfriend, had an African rope-burning ceremony with bongos and African people singing African songs, I presume in patois, to commemorate her death so it wouldn't exacerbate any racial tensions. Nice priorities. There's one thing you want to do when a black kid kills your girlfriend in point-blank range, shoots her through the chest, is make sure the African community is well represented at her funeral, and you follow African rituals. No, I'm not kidding. Look it up. He burned a rope, which is, I guess, something they do in fucking the Congo. Anyway, so I think a fight started. Scott fights the guy, but in the melee, someone else was stabbed to death by someone else. It may have even been the guy he was fighting, but he didn't stab anyone. Boom, 20 years in prison. 1990, just got out. 20 years is my whole life. In 1990, I had dreads. I was a vegetarian environmentalist who had only had stupid gas station jobs. I hadn't even gone tree planting yet. The idea of starting Vice was 4 years away. I was a bike messenger. I was an imbecile. I didn't know anything at all. I wore a communist pin, I believe. I think I had a Lenin pin on my punk coat. And then 40, you know, then you're old. You're kind of done at 40. Should have kids and be married by then. You've had all your experiences. You don't want to travel after that. So that's all in prison for him. Now, I call that innocent. It's called a fist fight. You don't go to jail for 20 years for a fist fight, no matter what happened in the melee. You don't have a knife in your hand. You didn't stab anyone. The end. So that was incredibly unjust. That's why I'd like to get him on the show. And anything else that DMS has a beef with is just a misunderstanding. Why can't we have beef with... Like, I like the beef with Antifa. That makes sense. Gotcha. I like the beef with jihadists. Good God. I mean, I'm scared of getting killed by them, but at least it's justified. And I like having beef with communists. Yeah, you guys are responsible for 100 million deaths. I like having beef with social justice warriors. Yeah, you guys get people fired for things that you got wrong, for fake news. You're wrecking the country. Those are all valid beefs. But beefs with things like Sharps and DMS and FSU and all these other guys doesn't make any sense. It's like we're on the same page. What do we disagree on exactly? Disagree about. But here's the crazy part about his case. That is totally legit in the UK now. Joint enterprise, it's called. And if you are with a group that commits a murder, the whole group does time. Now, of course, they don't enforce this on the Muslims. They literally have a get-out-of-jail-free card. It's a get-out-of-jail-free book. It's called the Quran. And so they don't get lumped in with a gang. And ironically, I think that would be a good solution to terrorism, like they do in India. When there's a suicide bomber, the whole family is sent to Pakistan or wherever they're from, probably Pakistan. Or maybe they're just sent to Pakistan. They have to leave the country. The entire family, cousins, uncles, aunts, everything. That's how it should go here. We had the guy who did the Pulse shooting. His dad was at Hillary rallies the next day. We see him at rallies holding up I'm with Hillary things, which was actually good for Trump. But why the fuck is he walking around? That was your son. I had no idea. I had no idea, man. Too bad then. You have to be curious. And if we had a thing where every family member was instantly extradited, and I don't know how far to make this. Like, is it second cousins? I don't know. Immediate family for sure. Siblings, yep. Siblings, parents, yes. Cousins, Get back to me on that. Probably. But then you have moderate Muslims going, so what's going on with Rashad? He was acting a little weird the other day. And isn't he going to that controversial mosque? He better not get me fucking extradited or you're dead. I got to look into this, see what's up with him. You know, that's the only solution to terrorism, really, is we need Muslims on our side. I know moderate Muslims are not terrorists, thank you. But I would like a little more participation, please. And, you know, you have ex-Muslims in Britain getting arrested, getting the SPLC is putting them on hate crime list. That guy sued, by the way, and won $7 million. But you hear Muslims in Britain go up to, like, the Tommy Robinsons of the world and say, I'd love to get involved, mate. I mean, it's really bad what's going on in Luton, but if I say anything, I'm in big trouble. Yeah, I'm going to need a little more bravery from you there, moderates. I need you to tell me about your corrupt cousin before he drives his truck over the Westminster Bridge and kills. I've been saying 8. I think it's only 6 people he killed, including himself. So 4 or 5. 4 citizens and I think 1 cop. Not that cops aren't citizens. You know what I'm saying. But Tommy was telling me about, like, this is a new thing in Britain. All the soccer hooligans were talking about it when I was there for his trial. Some nut was shooting at a police helicopter. Obviously, that's fucking insane, and you should be going to jail for a long time. That's attempted murder. But these other kids, they're all kids. They run out and they go, oh, fucking hell, man. Look at Eddie. He's shooting at a fucking... Eddie, you're mad, mate. And laughing and enjoying it, as stupid kids are wont to do. All 5 of the kids who were there with that kid shooting, 20 years in prison. Now, were they egging him on? I don't know. Should you go to jail for 20 years for egging someone on? Now, there's something where it's like a bank robbery and you all go there and the teller gets killed. You should all be responsible. You all embarked on that venture together. But that's not what they're using joint enterprise for. And I've even heard stories where there'll be a group of kids that go out. I'm talking too long. I'm starting to lose my train of thought. Group of geezers out on a piss out in London town. And there'll be like 15, 20 of them. And they will, when you're with a group like that, you start spreading thin. And sometimes the front part of the gang will, not even a gang, group of lads, will be half a block or maybe more than a block ahead. Then he gets in a fight with someone, stabs him, kills him. Everyone in that group does 20, 30 years. Isn't that fucking bizarre? So it's just picking off an entire demographic, working class soccer fans, hooligans, just taking them off the streets, filling the prisons. Now, and I talked to Scott about this, in America, that's an industry. You need customers. So we have a disgusting prison system here where I venture, and I've talked to a lot of ex-cons about this, I venture 5% of the people in prison now should be there, deserve to be there, are incompatible with society, should never be freed, and if they had a different background and they were nurtured and they went to school and they were loved, they'd still be pieces of shit. They're just bad eggs, 5%. The rest, drug-related. Domestic violence, drug-related. I guess rape and murder. But even with a lot of murders, it's drug territory. So we abolish the war on drugs, and we abolish welfare, which is 2 things Proud Boys have been pushing for a long time. You have to do them simultaneously. So you abolish the war on drugs. All drugs are legal. Yes, even heroin is legal. But you simultaneously abolish welfare. And now these black women don't have an incentive to dump their baby daddy, and they remain married, just like it was in the 40s when blacks committed the same crime that whites did. They also had the same divorce rate. It was only after the big welfare surge in the 70s and 80s that crime exploded, and that was exactly simultaneously, and yes, it's disproportionately black, but that was exactly simultaneously fathers not being with their families. Boys without dads have idle hands. Idle hands lead to crime, and crime is drugs in America. So you have to do both. You have to legalize drugs, and you have to essentially legalize dads. And once you got dads and legal drugs, the prisons would be empty. It would be rapists, those 5% I told you about, and no one else. I mean, I was talking to a guy once. I had him on my old show, the Gavin McInnes show. And he said, I'm looking around at my prison. He was there for 15 years for robbing a drug dealer, by the way. He ended up killing him. Why did he only get 15 years and Scott gets 20 for being near a stabbing? But anyway, this guy got 15 years. And he would dress up as the cops, as a SWAT team, and go into drug dens and rob the drug dealers. This one guy, drug dealer, pulled a gun on him. They had a shootout. He killed the drug dealer dressed in his SWAT gear. And other drug dealers there called the cops on him and testified. They got arrested for dealing drugs, but it was worth it for them to get the guy who killed their buddy. Anyway, I'm not really helping you garner sympathy for this dude, but he said, I'm looking around the prison and there's whites, blacks, there's rich, there's poor. Obviously, there's, you know, disproportionate numbers of black and poor, but there's still quite a variety of gentlemen here. And he goes, I realize 100% of the guys that I'm looking at are here because of drugs. Now, most of them were drug addicts, but there was guys like me who robbed a drug dealer, or there was guys caught up in turf wars or gang wars based on drugs. I'm not saying Scott is part of this group, by the way. It was all drug based. And the fact that we put these men in cages for decades. You know, I went to a penitentiary in Philadelphia that was penance. It was an experiment they did, and we don't know how successful it was, and I'll explain that in a second. But it was a very just prison, if you can imagine. And it was a room you had to yourself. It was about 12 by 12. You also had a tiny little lawn that was out the back, and you had a little doorway that went, and you were alone there. And you just had the Bible, and you read the Bible. And the sentences were usually 5 years, even murder. And you just read the Bible, you did your penance, and they'd also provide you with trades. So you'd come out a cobbler or something, right? You'd go there and you'd take these classes and you'd learn how to fix things. And they also wanted you to not have the stigma of having been a prisoner, an ex-con. So, and here's the crazy part, they burned all your files after you left and you were never on the way. Actually, Al Capone stayed at this place and they have his cell there. It's beautiful. He's got a big marble chest, big oak chair, little table. It looks like a little furniture store. And so they don't know how successful it was, but I would wager it was incredibly successful because it was just and it respected the men. But you have someone like Tommy who's in a fucking 6x7 cage, 23 and a half hours a day. And then for a half hour, he can pace in a slightly bigger cage. He can eat a can of tuna a day and a bag of crisps. And I think he had a piece of fruit because he could only spend something like a pound at the commissary every day. So that's, he'd get his protein from his tuna, lost 40 pounds. If you did that to a dog, you'd be arrested. If you did that to any other human, you'd be arrested. You're not allowed to do solitary for more than 14 days. Sorry, I'm off on a million tangents. But my point is, I had a very interesting discussion with Scott. I have nothing but respect for him and DMS and even Sheer Terror. Although I think that was very silly to say we're not allowed to go to shows because my politics or whatever. But I think the more we get lost in the weeds with a lot of this stuff. We talk about this guy said what, and you're a racist, and when the guy is clearly not. Fucking, we have people calling blacks white supremacists now. Oh yeah, you can be a white supremacist and still be black. You can be married to a black woman and still be a white supremacist. It's not that uncommon. Fuck off. Jesus Christ, that's your bad guy? That's your evil Nazi, the dude hanging out with black dudes? What's he planning to do, slit their throats when they're on the way home? Shut up. That's like saying, you know, you can have pedophiles who have never, ever looked at a kid and are happily married, but it's in their subconscious. Well, they're clearly not a threat then if they don't even know they are. But we get lost in the weeds when we have these big pictures going on, like the opioid epidemic killing 115 people a day, like this insane incarceration system where guys are being thrown in jail like fucking animals, put in cages, sometimes with very little evidence. And, you know, I talked to a dude the other day who's getting his gun permit, and they had his fingerprints from a charge he had in a fight he had at like Shea Stadium in 1985 that was expunged. And he goes, why the fuck are my prints still there? This case is supposed to be gone. And it doesn't show up anywhere else but with this one FBI background check. So he talks to fellows that he knows And cops, he knows, and he knew the cops know the judge, and they go, Jesus Christ, what a fuck up. And they get rid of those fingerprints. And the judge said the same thing I said, which is, how many motherfuckers are in jail because they don't have the resources to call their cop friend and say, get my prints out of there, you dumbass. What have you done? Or can't afford a lawyer. You know, speaking of Proud Boys, we just had a guy serve three and a half months at Rikers for having a gun with hollow point shells. The hollow point shells are often a year per bullet. That could have, the clip is what, 10? Could have had 10 years right there. But he spent a fortune on a lawyer. He's paying it off, deep in debt now. What about the people who don't have that access? That's the criminal system we have. And that's something I think should be a high priority. Now, if I'm going to sit down with Scott, that's what I'd love to get into. Not the fact that we agree on basically everything. Jesus, I hope this didn't come across as disrespectful to that, those guys, because that's not good for any of us. Had a rough week with Get Off My Lawn, which trying a different studio system, so all the shows were late, and I apologize for that. Bad, Gavin. That's me smacking my bare bum. I'm nude right now. Yeah, on Monday and Tuesday, we're going to do those in-studio sit-downs. CRTV Tonight is going to be the DC show that following Friday. Also got a big Thanksgiving special coming up where I'm going to go to a turkey farm. I guess I'm going to kill a turkey. Reminds me of a recording I have of my eldest son when he was five. And I was just recording him with a tape recorder. And I go, what do you want to do when you grow up? And he goes, I want to kill a mouse. What? Yeah, I want to have a little piece of mouse standing there. I want to kill a mouse. I want to have a piece of mouse standing there. I guess he wants to eat a mouse? You know, you got to record these things. That was what my grandmother always said before she died. You need to record these, Gavin. You're going to wish they were still here. Don't worry, lady. I got my iPhone. The only thing I regret is I didn't record you more. Anyway, now we have someone just rambling on. This is no longer an informative podcast. This is a guy who's talking to himself on the bus. I like you more than a friend, and I will see you soon.
It's hard to be stuck in the car for an hour, much less weeks at a time. But sadly, many families right here in our community call their cars home. Wouldn't it be nice to help them find an apartment instead, or a bed, or even a shower? Well, you can by giving to the Salvation Army, where every donation fights for good. Visit salvationarmy.listenandgive.org now to help fund housing assistance initiatives for our neighbors most in need. That's salvationarmy.listenandgive.org.